A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On this play, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 37. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are covering The War Game and Threads. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. So as Brian says, we're discussing two shows, and we're asking the question really, which is what happens when British TV looks at the consequences of a nuclear attack on the ordinary people of Britain?
As you well may know, nuclear war was a very big theme and a staple for science fiction and speculative fiction during the Cold War era. And we're going to look at these two examples of Cold War era TV films that examine the idea of nuclear war and its consequences. The first of these is The War Game, which was a 50-minute speculative documentary that came out in 1965, and it came out to a great deal of controversy. It acted as a sort of news program about events that had not actually happened.
And then we're also discussing another example, which is a TV film called Threads, and that came out in 1984. It's a longer film. It's about 110 minutes. Again, it was from the BBC. Again, it was quite controversial, but perhaps not with the same political impact that The War Game had, which we'll talk about. But the BBC, again, sort of exploring this area of nuclear war and the impact during this sort of Cold War period. So we've got one from sort of the start of the Cold War or the early years, and then another film more towards the end of the Cold War.
And as we'll see, the intervening roughly 20 years makes a huge difference in how they could portray things on film, how people reacted to things on film, and what they were capable of doing with the medium.
Absolutely.
The War Game was a mixture of this naturalistic documentary type style that was done very much like news footage, with interruptions from talking heads, experts on various aspects of nuclear war and its consequences. And it was very much done like a documentary, but a speculative documentary where it was written and at its heart a fiction.
The War Game was produced by a very young filmmaker at the time, a chap called Peter Watkins, who made this while he was working at the BBC, but I don't think he quite intended for it to cause such a row between the BBC and the British government at the time. A row which resulted, as we'll discuss in a moment, in the film not actually being shown on the BBC, despite the BBC having commissioned it. It was not shown on the BBC, and in fact, it wasn't broadcast on British television for another 20 years, despite being made and ready to go in 1965.
Yes, that's right. Peter Watkins was the writer, director, and producer for The War Game, so it was really a work that he had been intending to do and something that he constructed almost from end to end. Now, Threads was also produced by the BBC, and it was done in 1984, so almost 20 years after The War Game. It was both similar to The War Game and very different from The War Game. It used more of a story approach, and it felt more like science fiction as opposed to speculative documentary. But it definitely took influence from The War Game in the way it used its narrator in a similar way and so on. It examined a few different groups of characters before a nuclear attack and during and after the nuclear attack, and followed it in the following months and even in the following years.
Yes, I mean, as you say, it had a more story-based approach. The War Game was more like a documentary, and this thread started out almost like a soap opera, like a family drama, with this small number of characters who we get to know at the start of the film. And then as we go along through the story of Threads, we'll get these more sort of typical science fiction elements coming in as the attack happens and as we get to see some of the consequences. The film Threads was also very memorably scary and quite disturbing. disturbing to the audiences who saw it in 1984 and again when it was repeated and again when it was shown, I think, in schools and colleges, which we'll talk about. So it had quite an impact when it came out, partly, I suppose, because it was actually broadcast, unlike the War Game, which was very hard to see for many, many years.
Yes, that's right. It also, in its lead-up, it dealt with the politics and the situation that led to the outbreak of nuclear war. And that was a central piece to how Threads was built as a show. Now, getting into the stories a little bit more, the War Game really doesn't look at any particular group of people. It uses a narrator, and in fact a couple of different narrators, in a very focused way, as you would in a news documentary. And the narration is really what ties the whole program together.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it tells the story of why Britain would have been at risk from nuclear attack, which various targets around British Isles would have been picked out by a Russian attack. And the narration tells us about some of the statistics. And it also tells us a hypothetical, I suppose, scenario that would lead to the attack, which is portrayed in the documentary. And the example they chose, I suppose, perhaps inevitably a few years after the Berlin Wall had gone up, is a conflict in Berlin, which we see a scene of, I think, in the War Game. Presumably in a conflict between East and West Berlin, which leads to a much, obviously, larger conflict between America and Russia, and that provokes the attack, which is portrayed in the film. As we go on, we sort of get these individual scenes throughout the film, showing various stages of what's going on. But as you say, Brian, it doesn't really sort of follow any particular group of people.
It doesn't follow specific people, but it is very much about the impact on people. And while it does give you some setup about how this happens, the politics and the situation that leads into why this nuclear event happens is really not a central part of what's happening in the War Game. It's really just something there to set things up. And then the focus is all about what do people know about, you know, what people know and what people don't know about nuclear strikes. What are the things that could happen? And then when things happen, what happens to the people? How they set things up, you have sort of two streams going on where you have the news-like footage interviewing people and showing things happening in the aftermath at various places and times. And then you have a second stream, which are these expert viewpoints, which are the sort of talking head shots. The talking heads are all giving very positive viewpoints about how it will be easy to overcome things in the aftermath of a nuclear attack and things just won't be that bad. These are used for a great deal of irony because you have at the start, you end up with lots of talking heads saying how easy it will be. Then when things start going wrong, you see how hard it is. And then when you see how terrible things are in the aftermath, you start cutting back to the talking heads. Heads, presumably from earlier, who are still saying that everything will be fine. So there is a great deal of irony in how they handle that.
Absolutely. As you say, they counterpoint these talking head sequences with the sort of dramatic enactments of various things going horribly wrong. So we see a family who are actually getting a visit from the family doctor when they hear the air raid siren, I suppose, going off. And then we actually get the attack and the consequences on this house that aren't prepared. And then in the aftermath, we see fire crews struggling to deal with the firestorms. Then from then on, we get these episodes of the police and the military trying to deal with the aftermath. And all, as you say, proving quite a dramatic and ironic counterpoint to the reassuring talking heads telling us that everything would be fine and that such an attack would be survivable. And the scenes we see quite obviously demonstrate the opposite.
Yes, and some of the things we see are quite graphic.
Yes, quite disturbing and quite grim.
That late last night, in order to show collective communist support for the Chinese invasion of South Vietnam, the Russian and East German authorities have sealed off all access to the city of Berlin and have stated their intention of occupying the western half of the city within 48 hours unless the Americans in Vietnam withdraw yesterday's decision to use tactical nuclear weapons against invading Chinese forces. Here in Britain, Her Majesty's government has declared a state of national emergency to last the duration of the present crisis. As from 12 noon today, the central government will cease to function, and the administration of the country will be handled by 15 regional commissioners. Further,
now, Threads, in contrast, deals with three different groups of people. We have two families, the Kemps and the Becketts, and we have the town emergency planning committee.
We have the two young families, or rather, we have the two sort of young members of the families. We have Jimmy Kemp, a young man played by Rhys Dinsdale, and Ruth Beckett, his girlfriend, played by Karen Meagher. They are dealing at the start of the film, in a very sort of soap opera or family drama style. They're dealing with an unplanned pregnancy, which is obviously going to bring them together and bring the two families together. And there's some class differences, and there's some bits and pieces of sort of classic British drama, I suppose, going on. And then while all this is going on, there's also the news. We keep hearing snippets of the news telling us a bit more about the story.
And as it goes on in the early part of this show, you get more and more of the news that you hear about a growing political crisis with Russia invading Iran. They seem to be set on a course for war with the U.S. We see the characters reacting to this. We get the feeling of this very large sense of tension building. Meanwhile, as we're following these people through ordinary things in their lives and following the two families, we also see the emergency committee taking to this bunker to prepare for the worst. The emergency committee is supposed to coordinate things in the aftermath of the attack for the emergency response. And it becomes clearer and clearer that not only did the members of the emergency committee often not know they were part of this emergency committee beforehand, they really weren't prepared for dealing with this and were struggling to deal with their own situation for themselves, let alone being able to actually provide some sort of assistance to everyone else.
Yeah, it's like the war game. We have these figures who are members of, I don't know, the council or the city leaders. At the start of the film, they're giving us very sort of reassuring messages, and they seem to be in control and know what they're doing. And as we see, once they get to the bunker and once the attack actually happens and a nuclear device goes off, then we see things falling apart fairly quickly, and that actually all their plans come to not very much at all.
That's right. And we see all three of these groups, the two families and the emergency committee, as things develop over weeks and months and at the end even years. So we see how people are struggling to overcome what has happened. And in the end, they really can't and end up having to resort to a far more meager lifestyle than they ever would have considered before.
So the story's ticking along. We've got Jimmy and Ruth setting up home together and trying to decorate this flat or apartment that they're going to move into when the baby's born. While this is going on, we keep hearing bits of the news of the growing sort of tension between the US and Russia. And we even hear a snippet at one point of the American president speaking. And just as a quick British invaders aside, the voice of the American president is quite recognisable as the actor Ed Bishop, who played Commander Ed Straker in UFO. A little cameo there from one of our British invaders' favourite. Anyway, all this builds up until, I suppose, the inevitable nuclear incident happens and America and Russia go to war. There's a nuclear attack on Britain. And just outside the city of Sheffield, where the story is set, a nuclear device goes off. And when it happens, Ruth and Jimmy are apart. Ruth is at home with her family and Jimmy is at work. And he tries to get home to her while she has to take refuge in the basement of her house with her parents and with her grandmother. And really, the cozy sort of family soap drama has changed radically.
That's right. And we get a sense that we're looking at a very ordinary group of people. It was very carefully built up at the beginning of the story that these are people with family issues and different people from different walks of life and different professions. The fact that it was done in Sheffield rather than done in London in sort of classic BBC style, BBC accents and so on, it gives you a very sort of down-to-earth feeling that these are just ordinary people who could be like any of us. And that was done very effectively.
Having to deal with these absolutely extraordinary events. And as you say, the events we'll follow them for in the weeks and months and years after the attack. And over all this, we have this narrative voice. We have the narration provided by a chap called Paul Vaughan, who was certainly, I mean, I found his voice extremely recognisable because in the 1980s, he was the sort of the voice of British documentaries and of a programme called Horizon, a sort of well-known documentary stream stream on the BBC. And he tells us the effects of the attack on British society and on the land and the climate and all sorts of things, really.
The narration is an interesting point because Threads very much picked up on the style of narration that the War Game used. Both of them used a sort of established news narrator. They also took it from the point of view where the narrator would sometimes be talking about how things are and what is happening, but sometimes would be talking about what could happen or what would be happening. So from the narrator's point of view, it isn't clear if these are events that are happening or if these are potential events that could happen. And it keeps us on edge a little bit, the way that the narrator drifts in and out of that. And that was something that I think the War Game introduced, and Threads very much picked up on it.
Yeah, it's interesting, as you say, because they do have very similar styles. And whereas Paul Vaughan was sort of voice of documentary in the 1980s, perhaps quite interestingly, there's one of the narrators on the War Game must have been a very young Michael Aspel, who was a newsreader and has since gone on to be a very sort of recognisable face and personality on British TV, who's had a very long, successful career. But again, he had that sort of newsreader documentary voice in the 60s, so it's quite similar.
Yes, and in both cases, as you say, they were recognizable voices. The difference being that in the War Game, the narration was very central and it was used a great deal. In Threads, the narration was there, it was used from time to time, but it was not used in nearly as pervasive a way as it was in the War Game. It was just used a little bit here and there.
Yeah. So perhaps we'll move on to talk about some of the production details of the two shows.
Now, Peter Watkins was recruited by the BBC in the early to mid-60s. In particular, he was recruited by Hugh Weldon. There were some TV film projects that Watkins wanted to make. In particular, he wanted to make the War Game. He was told, well, maybe, but you should do something else first.
So the film he made instead, before he went on to make the War Game, he was sort of diverted, as you say, to making a film called Culloden, which was, as the name suggests, a reconstruction of a historical battle in Scotland, which occurred during the Jacobite uprising sometime in the 1740s. And he made this, again, this sort of documentary-style reconstruction, as if there had been news cameras filming the Battle of Culloden. And so again, you know, sort of predating what he was going to go on to talk about in the War Game, it's quite an anti-war film. It was shown on the BBC in 1964, and it was very successful. It was critically acclaimed. It was quite well received. It went on to win a couple of awards. So his sort of reputation as a young, rising film producer was sort of built upon by Culloden. And I think as a result, he perhaps got a little bit more leeway with Hugh Weldon and the BBC to move on to one of the projects that he really wanted to make.
I think so. Culloden is actually quite a striking film. It's quite dark and gritty and showing these realities of war in all of their darkness. Later the same year, Watkins told his bosses at the BBC that he wanted to make the War Game, and if he couldn't make the War Game next, then he would resign. So he made the War Game starting later in 1964.
And he went to Kent in England to start filming, and he did something which he'd already done in Culloden, which was basically to use as many local people, non-actors, as possible, in quite large numbers, obviously, as the sort of main characters that he would film for the various sort of dramatic enactments in the War Game. So by and large, there are no really recognisable actors in the film at all. We have perhaps a recognisable voice narrating in the with Michael Aspel, but we have no recognisable actors in the film itself, except possibly, if you look on the IMDb page for The War Game, you will see that somebody there has spotted a very, very young Brian Cox, who's now a quite well-known, established Hollywood actor, as one of the sort of men and women in the street who are interviewed about what they know about nuclear war. But apart from that, I mean, you know, there's no sort of actors. It's very much the men and women in the street, and there's these episodes where they talk straight to the camera as if they had been interviewed. But even when they're doing the dramatic enactments, because it's shot in documentary style, they glance at the camera as people would, as it's supposed to be a news crew.
Yes, it was shot with a handheld camera in very much a mid-1960s news photography type of way. Those moments where the people on the street were interviewed, especially the ones early in the film before the attack, they were completely unscripted. He was taking these actors who were not professional actors and just asked them a series of questions, and they gave honest answers, and these became the lines of people saying essentially how little they knew about nuclear attacks and the potential effects of them. Now, the special effects in the War Game were done on a very limited budget, but they were actually quite remarkable in that they used some makeup, for example, for burn victims and other people who were not well in various ways, like radiation poisoning. And the way it was done and the way it was shot in black and white was very striking and really looked quite convincing. And the effects of the firestorm and of flashpoints and things like this were realized in quite simple ways, but they had a lot of impact, and they really worked very well.
Yeah, it's quite fantastic, really. As you say, the makeup, I don't know if it's because that this is a black and white film, but it really it looks terribly effective. It just looks quite horrendous. The burns, especially the burns on children that we see quite a lot of, it looks very gruesome. And I don't know who did the makeup for this film, but they did a remarkable job on a very tight budget, because it all looks very, very convincing and unpleasant. There was also, as you say, quite remarkable action sequences, in particular this episode with the fire crew trying to fight the firestorm and dealing with the shock wave and sort of the wind as everything sucked in towards the explosion. And interestingly, because I keep trying to look for these British Invaders connections in these programs, some of these action sequences were sort of choreographed by a chap called Derek Ware, who also used to do fights and stunts for Doctor Who in the 60s.
In an urban society, everything connects. Each person's needs are fed by the skills of many others. Our lives are woven together in a fabric. But the connections that make society strong also make it vulnerable.
Now, going forward some two decades to Threads. Threads was produced by Mick Jackson from Life Story and The Bodyguard. He had earlier done a documentary for QED called A Guide to Armageddon. That was in 1982, and it was a bit more of a factual documentary, and he wanted to make something that was more personal and had more of the feel that you were looking at regular, ordinary people getting caught up in something.
And he looked for, obviously, for a script for this project, or for a writer for it, and the writer that he chose, or that he agreed to produce the film with, was Barry Hines, who in Britain is most famous for writing a book called A Kestrel for a Knave, which became an absolutely classic British film called Kes, which again is set in sort of north of England and has quite a sort of grim and gritty working class basis. Quite a remarkable choice of writer for this particular project, because I think he brings that sort of working class and family-based approach to Threads, which, as we've said, works so well and brings us into the characters.
Yes, he did. And Threads was set in Sheffield, and it was also recorded there, Sheffield being an industrial city in the north of England. Because of that, it was largely done with Northern English accents, which have a very regional and almost rural sound to them. So you get something that has this feel of being sort of working class and in a city with steel mills and a very sort of industrial feel. As we mentioned before, that helps ground things and give you the feeling that this is a very ordinary community of people. This is not only the highly educated people or only the wealthy or the politicians or the people in London or anything like that. This is ordinary, everyday people. And that really added to things.
Absolutely. And these ordinary everyday people who terrible things are happening to. And then over all of it, we have perhaps, you know, not as often as in the War Game, but over it we have this narration by Paul Vaughan, who, as I've said, was absolutely the sort of voice of authority, the voice of British documentary. And when you hear his voice, I mean, certainly for me, when he starts the film, you hear his voice, you just think, well, this is real. This is, you know, when Paul Vaughan talks, he's telling us the truth. He's telling us something that's very real and actual. And it just sort of brings home the sort of terrible impact of Threads.
That's right.
So that will conclude our first part of our discussion on The War Game and Threads, these two films. In our next episode, we're going to be talking a bit more about some of the famous images from the two films and why they disturbed and upset so many people. And also, we're going to talk a bit more about the controversy about The War Game in particular and why it was banned for 20 years and such a significant part of British television history.
The imagery in both of these films is really very powerful. So we will definitely have some deep things to talk about with that next time. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We also have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there as well. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
And please join us for our next episode. This is Eamon from England, saying goodbye.